One of the things that tech startups and most B2B companies have in common is their aversion to marketing. Most prefer to go deep on product development and then take a build it and they will come approach to marketing. Not surprising then that so many struggle to get customers, especially in hyper-competitive markets. But how can companies with limited budgets compete, even with bigger players? Hi, I'm Jane Singer, and thank you for joining me today on A Seat at the Table and being part of our global community, which has now grown to over 100 countries. Today I had the opportunity to speak with Christine Wetzler, founder and president of Pietrella PR and Marketing, a specialty firm with an international reach. The firm has been recognized as one of Chicago's best PR firms and digital marketing agencies. Christine is an expert in helping emerging companies and startups go from zero to hero, even if they have limited resources. In this episode, she discusses strategies and tactics that any firm can implement, even low-budget startups. What to do when you're struggling with client growth, how to build market credibility for your company and brand, and why companies need to look beyond social media to grow a profitable business. Before we get started, if you're a supply chain executive who'd like to finally put an end to information overload and get a simple, concise, fact-based summary of key market developments and shifts, then the current situation in sourcing is exactly what you're looking for. To get immediate access, head on over to thecurrentsituation.net. That's thecurrentsituation.net, where you can get all of the details. I'll put links in the show notes, and of course, you can find all of the links and details over on our podcast website, seatpodcast.com. Now let's sit down with Christine and find out how we can start to grow our customer base, even with minimal marketing resources. Christine, thank you so much for joining us on A Seat at the Table today. I think that what you're doing specifically with marketing in the B2B space is so interesting, because I think that that's one sector where we don't really see a lot of companies that have expertise in that. And many, many companies in B2B also look at marketing as sort of a waste of money, right? Marketing is something right. That big, rich companies do. So and for anybody else, it's like, don't bother with that. So I'm anxious to talk to you and get your views on this.
Absolutely. I think you're right. B2C has always been more of a leader in the creativity and the innovation in the marketing space. But having worked in both throughout my more than 20 years, I definitely see, especially now that B2B is starting to come around. They're starting to see the gains that you can achieve on some of the more consumer-focused marketing play. Right. And I think the other thing that's changed dramatically, at least over time that I've seen, is everyone's ecosystems have gotten a lot louder.
Right.
So before, especially before social media, B2B had salespeople primarily. And that was why marketing to them didn't necessarily rise to the top of their largest priorities, because in effect, the salespeople did a lot of their marketing.
That's a good point.
But if you look back on it, they were doing, you know, the B2C marketing and PR that we're doing now.
Right.
It's just that it wasn't as time intense.
Yes.
So they did it as kind of a sidecar to their sales responsibilities. And now, because we're finding it's more ubiquitous, you know, people need to spend some more time on it. And it can be a second job for a salesperson if they're trying to do it themselves.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, it looks easy until you're the person who has to do it and you realize it can be overwhelming.
That's right. And I think they're also getting more sophisticated with tracking. A lot of times, consumers, you have direct to consumer and then you have cataloging.
Right.
That happens online, and whether that happened in a catalog, but via print or online, there was a path or a journey
right.
that you could track the consumer. And the B2B, again, that kind of went through a salesperson for the most part. So now, though, you're seeing more B2B sites, more B2B brands following in that path where they're selling their services or selling their hourly rates or whatever it is that they have more online in an e-commerce situation. So it opens them up to more consumer tactics.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. And I think that on the consumer side of things, certainly there's been a lot of focus on the number of clicks and the number of views. And now that B2B gets into it, I mean, with consumer, you could say that there is a wider potential audience for any given consumer product, where B2B is really oftentimes very focused. And yet you see people who are chasing clicks and views. And perhaps you could weigh in on that a bit.
Yes, certainly. And it's a very important question, because I think people get hung up on that. And
yeah.
I always come back to, what is the goal in the situation? For sure. I mean, if you look at it in tandem with a B2C, with likes and clicks, the reason that those are important in a straight B2C situation is because that's the reach you need in order to sell a certain number of products in that channel, you know, on the website or on the app. Whereas on B2B, you're looking more for credibility, and your reach is measured a little differently. Most B2B doesn't sell online or in the public space.
Right.
It still is very much a hand-to-hand sale in many respects. And so unless you're a software and you have a subscription, but even then, you're not reaching a broad audience, you're reaching a very specific audience. And so, yeah, the likes and the reach are not as important as a measurement tactic.
Okay.
Because you can achieve the same reach that you need. You can achieve the targeting that you need without getting likes and things like that. So I always tell people, don't be afraid if you put up a Facebook post and it's only one or two people actually like it.
Right.
You may have reached your audience just by virtue of the fact that it showed up in their feed.
Right.
That could be reinforcing their credibility with that audience without that being measured in a like or a call to action completely. So there's a subtle difference with B2B there.
I think that's a very good point, because you're absolutely right, particularly for B2B, which oftentimes is a more critical purchase because it's something you're buying to utilize in your company, as opposed to something like buying, let's say, toothpaste, where worst comes to worst, you don't like the taste, okay, you just buy a different brand next time. It's less of a commitment. So yes, the importance of reinforcing credibility and the sense of reliability and trust that you get from seeing, like you said, that post or that ad again and again without people clicking on it. Yeah, that is very important.
If you really think about your own journeys through LinkedIn and things like that, the companies that you give a lot of credit to from a credibility standpoint are those that are seen in your feed that often. But the ones that are doing a good job of making sure that their name is in front of you, whether it's a direct selling opportunity or not. And I think it's so subtle, you might not realize it until you know, that's a lot of times when CEOs come to me and say, my competitor, every time I log into LinkedIn, he's doing something. He's on a webinar, he's doing this, he's doing that. I can guarantee you that the CEO is not doing anything differently, you know,
right.
He's seeing that brand and that person more often. He's not liking it. He's not interacting with it, but it's still there. But yes, I think people do forget that the journey requires a lot of touch points in order to create credibility. And you are exactly right. That credibility bar is a lot higher in B2B than it is in B2C, because you've got it exactly right. You don't like your toothpaste that you picked up in Target? Well, then you get another kind next time you go. It's the bar is so low sometimes for consumer products.
Right.
That even when you're buying a car, which is very expensive, that's a different kind of buying decision than
yes.
if you're implementing $100,000 worth of software for your organization. So, you know, in those situations, the credibility is deeply important, because you, not only are you spending a lot of money, but you're rolling it out and attaching it to your brand promise with
right.
your employees and with all the people that you work with. And so you know, if the company you're working with doesn't seem strong or doesn't seem like they have their ducks in a row, it can be harder. It kind of begs the question, why would you work with that company? Why would we implement this when, I mean, we have an old saying in PR that nobody ever got, well, it's not just PR. It's right. Everywhere, I think. Nobody ever got fired for hiring IBM.
Right.
And I always say, well, we'll turn you into IBM. Not necessarily financially, but perception-wise. You know, people will go online and understand why you picked this organization, because the credibility is there for everyone to see.
Right. Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And while we're on the subject of social media, you do see that some people are remiss in not doing enough, as you were saying. And then you see other people who are just relentlessly posting every 5 minutes. I mean, is there a point, and I know it varies with different companies and different products, but just in general, is there, at what point is it just too much? Are you actually perhaps going to get a negative return?
Sure. So we know that people spend on average about 15 to 20 minutes on each feed. So you can imagine that people go through LinkedIn and Facebook, and it's usually when they're waiting in line or they're on the bus, or so, you know, that averages out to about 20 minutes. So I would say you want your posts or your content to show up in that 20 minute time frame.
Wow.
So I don't think there's a necessarily formula. I think there definitely has to be a strategic intent. If you're trying to do thought leadership, for example, you want to make sure that you're engineering those posts so that they exemplify that. And that's hard to do, you know, 15 times a day.
Oh, absolutely.
But if you're talking about products, if you're talking about decisions, you can absolutely take that more than once. And one example that I often give is the articles that we get. A lot of times B2B companies will take an article. They got a Forbes article, for instance. They will send out a tweet or on LinkedIn, hey, we just appeared in Forbes.
Right.
And then that's it. And they won't do any more. Mm. And to me, that article can be discussed on social media, especially if it's relevant to your industry, in many different forms over the next few months. And so what I challenge clients to do is take all of those wins and break them up into smaller discussions so that they can post the same URL, the same Forbes article, but the content may appeal to a different person, or they may not have seen the first post or whatever it is. And so if you do that often enough, you get to where you are posting once every few hours, once every, you know, once or twice a day. Mm-hmm. I think for B2B, you know, you definitely have to think about a daily posting situation.
Yeah.
For B2C, it's much higher, you know, and that's another confusion that I want to mention too, because I also get that. Well, my competitors post 15 times a day, and I think that there definitely is an overkill for especially B2B. Because people aren't, you're not going to buy $100,000 worth of software because of one LinkedIn post.
Right.
So if you're posting 15 times a day about your product, it could get a little overwhelming for your target audience.
Right.
And affect kind of a different perception. But I think if you focus on good content, good discussions, authenticity, that's the way to go with that. And then just don't forget that everything's a discussion online. That's what social media exists for, so we can have discussions. So, you know, that article can be chopped up into many, many different discussions over the next couple months, so or years even. I mean, I have clients that still use their fantastic placements 5 years later because they're fantastic placements, and they should, especially if they're still relevant.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you're right about that. I mean, as much as being visible and being visible frequently is important, you do run into algorithms that start to punish you for for posting too much. LinkedIn, it seems, it's hard to know because it's difficult to decode the algorithms, but it does seem that in some cases, if you're posting too frequently, unless those posts are getting a tremendous amount of reaction from other people, that they do put sort of speed bumps in there, and then the next posts don't do so well.
Right. Well, and especially on LinkedIn, Facebook, the comments bring the content back up to the top of everybody's feed again. So that's why I like focusing on discussions and things that are more authentic, especially for CEOs, because they are more apt to talk and be engaged about something that they're interested in, about something that makes good sense to them. And so you don't have to post 15 times if other people are commenting and it's bringing it up in their feed and their friends' feed. And that's also another third-party credibility boost that, you know, you've started a conversation that people are in tune to and are responding to. And I know myself, for one, I'm more likely to read through the comments and click through things that are showing up more often on my newsfeed because my friends are engaging with it.
Right.
Than I am just clicking on somebody's link apropos of nothing. So that's another good thing to remember is those are touches as well. So if you post something, say once every 2 days, but it really gets a lot of engagement, you really are posting in effect a few times a day because it's popping up in people's news feeds when people comment, every time people comment. So I would say focus on engagement, less on the actual posting and more on getting people to discuss what you want to talk about.
I think that's a really good point. I think you're absolutely right. Quality over quantity. Now, if you're talking about smaller companies, emerging companies, startups, obviously they have less budget and less manpower than a larger corporation. Where do you recommend they start? You know, given whatever budget that they have, where should they start? Where should they concentrate their budget for the time being?
So I think the first thing that anybody needs to do when they start marketing is decide where that credibility mark is. You know, what is it that you want to be when you grow up, or what is it that you want to have happen that's not happening?
Okay.
They start with the results. Like, I need articles. And then when I ask them, why do you need them? You know, they say, well, it's for leads. And I say, well, if you want leads, articles aren't going to do that. You know, so when you start with what you want to have happen, and I would guess that for most startups and emerging business, that is leads. They want sales. Right. They want people to be aware of their business. So I would start them first on Google Ads, quite frankly.
And interesting.
On their website, you can do something that's called remarketing. So when somebody comes to your website, I know, Jane, you know this, but for people that are listening that might not.
No, it's good to explain it.
Yeah, they come to your website and they will go to Amazon or the Wall Street Journal and see your banner ads on those sites because they visited your website. That's called remarketing. And that's very easy to set up. You can spend, as little as $100 on those kinds of ads. And they're very, especially with Google now, Google's made it so easy to set up display ads. They also have a remarketing tool for your website.
Right.
So you can pop on there, spend a few $100s, if that, on those ads that are targeted. And that will start to bring in leads for you.
Right.
So, you know, what I would say after that is that's when you're talking about more traditional PR.
Right.
Because you need to build your credibility in two ways. Your brand, you want people to see that. But you also want them to start seeing your infiltration into the marketplace. And that's where PR comes into play.
Right, so. Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Now, a lot of companies that get started, particularly in B2B, typically the focus really is on product development, you know, building out the software, trying to refine the look of the product. And nothing has really been thought of at all on marketing. So what should they be sort of looking at in terms of setting a budget?
Again, it depends on where you are in your growth from a business standpoint.
Okay.
I would say that at the beginning, you need to spend a little bit more on marketing.
Right.
Just because you need to make everything consistent. So
yeah.
Consistency is really the name of the game at the beginning. You want your packaging, your website, your anything branded
right.
from your company to say and look and feel the same way. And you want to make an effort to do that. So obviously that's going to be different for everybody.
Right.
You know, I'm a service business. I don't have widgets, so I don't have
yeah.
to worry about packaging and all that business. But there are companies that have a fantastic website, but then when you order their product or you order something from them, the customer experience doesn't come through as slick and confident
right.
as the website does. And so you want to fix those things at the very beginning when they're easy to fix.
Right.
And it's kind of a paradox for new business owners because it's spending money and time on something that isn't measurable at the
right.
beginning when everything is measurable at that point. But I will tell you that fixing it later or finding out that you can't grow as fast as you want into a certain part of your market
right.
because of it is a really expensive problem to have later
right. yeah.
in the game. And so even though it seems expensive at the front end, it is so much expensive to fix it to start with, to make it correct the first time, than it is to try and fix it later. And I've definitely had clients that that have struggled with this. They have a good idea, they have a good concept, they may even have a few baseline customers that keep, you know, the lights on and everything afloat.
Right.
But they can't grow. And when we start to pick down into everything, you know, peel back the onions, we realize customer experience is not great. And
right.
they don't necessarily think that that's part of their selling strategy. And I would say it is nowadays. It has
yeah,
to be. It
absolutely.
Has to be. People are just, but I would add the caveat that it doesn't have to be crazy expensive.
Okay.
It's just, you have to have an appreciation for it at the beginning of, you know, building the situation.
Is there any benchmark that you might say in terms of, well, when you're putting the company together, if this is your total expenditure on all areas, this percent should be on marketing, or if this is what your sales target is, this percent should be on marketing, assuming that we're
yeah.
still talking about B2B?
I usually say 5 to 7%.
Okay.
And a little less of gross too, not of net. I think that may be a little shocking to some business owners when they're writing their business plan, but I would say again, at the beginning, that is the least expensive time to build your customer journeys and
right.
to reinforce them in the public eye. And so it's hard to quantify later. It's hard to look at something and say, well, I knew this was going to happen, you know, and quantify what has been lost because it hasn't been put in place. So marketing definitely needs to be more included and respected at the beginning of an emerging company's. It's a little frustrating for me when they don't, quite frankly,
right.
when they say, well, I'll need you in a few years when,
yes.
you know, I do agree that PR isn't necessarily needed at the beginning because it's not going to help you if nobody knows what your brand does. And you can use PR to educate once you've
right.
got everything
yeah.
up and running. But when you're first starting out, you know, the function really needs to be on getting your brand voice out and getting leads.
I think it's an important point because when you get started in this, if you don't come from a marketing or advertising background, you don't know what you don't know, so to speak. So you come into it with what you know. So people will come into a startup because they know how to develop software, right? Or they know how to design a product or whatever that might be. And so they are sort of flying blind when it comes to understanding what role marketing might play, how to go about it, and so forth. So I think it's important that people are educated on this side of things.
I think it's also important to tell business owners, whether they're startups or not, because I've seen it across the board, that same challenge occurs on the other side too. And I think that's why people struggle with hiring marketing agencies or hiring consultants or even hiring like a CMO. It's because CMOs are good, or, you know, marketing people or account executives or whatever it is, they're oftentimes very good at what they do. They're good at PR, they're good at marketing, they're good at digital marketing, but they aren't business people.
Right.
So, you know, a lot of times they have the same lack of capacity to look at the whole picture and say, this is what you need in this moment. You
right.
know, so I think that's important too, to try and find, if you're looking for help, you know, find somebody that understands business too.
Right.
Because it'll help them and you make decisions based on your actual goals.
Yes. Yeah, I think that's a really good point.
The clients that I've seen not do well with marketing and PR are the ones that aren't listening to the market.
Yes.
The ones that are not paying attention to what they're assuming that their customers want X and they really want Y, and they're still marketing to X, and then they're complaining because they don't know why the leads aren't coming in. And, you know, it can be as simple as just listening and changing your marketing, you know, tweaking it to start talking about why instead, and then boom, everything changes. So, you know, I think that's one thing that I've over 20 years struggled with a lot, is an assumption that a business owner has about their business. It can be really hard. I mean, I've owned my own business since 2002, and I'm guilty of it too. Somebody will say, well, that's not how we do it anymore. And
right.
it takes me a minute to get the grace to say, please explain it to me, you know, so I can understand where you're coming from, rather than, nope, that's how it's always been, you know? So I, for a business owner, especially one that's doing okay, it can be hard to say, but you could be doing even better. You just don't know it.
I'm so glad you brought that up, because I am a firm believer in the value of doing market research with your customers mm-hmm. to try to understand how they see things, because you're absolutely mm-hmm. right. We fall into the trap of making assumptions and also looking mm-hmm. what competitors do and looking at those as sort of the guidelines for how we do things. Whereas what you're saying, which I think is quite important, is that talk to your customers, see how they see things, see what they want, see how they're interpreting things. Now, mm-hmm. Christine, you've shared so many interesting things. How can people connect with you? Where can they find you?
Yes. So, oh gosh, there's a bunch of different ways. Of course, my website,
okay.
which is PIETRYLAPR. It's
okay.
PIETRYLAPR.com. And I also write for Forbes. I write for Entrepreneur.
Okay.
If you Google my name or the company name, all of that will pop up, and there's lots of good information and things
right.
there. That also shows up on the website. And then, yeah, I'm on all of the social networks under the same Petrilla PR and Christine Wetzler, C. Wetzler on Instagram. So, yeah, I'm on all of those things. As a marketer, I kind of have to be.
So, yes, absolutely. Well, I'll include
yeah.
those links in the show notes and over on our podcast website at seatpodcast.com, so that people will have many opportunities to find your links, to connect with you. And thank you so much for sharing so much information. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thank you. And if anybody has any questions, or if you have questions, you can send them my way, and I'm glad to answer them. I'm always glad to talk about marketing. I'm kind of a marketing nerd, so any excuse to talk is a good one for me.
Okay, well, that sounds great. And we do have a function on our podcast website now where people who are listening can go over there, and there's a form. You can ask a question, and we will forward that over to our guests. So please make use of that.
All right.
And,
thank you so much, Jane.
Oh, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Yes, mine too. Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of A Seat at the Table. As I mentioned at the beginning of this podcast, we're adding a new feature. If you've ever listened to a podcast and thought, I have a question, well, now you can ask. We'll be letting you know about upcoming guests on our show, and you can send in your questions. Also, you can ask questions after the show, and we'll forward them to our guests for feedback. If you'd like to participate or just want to learn more, head on over to our website at seatpodcast.com. That's seatpodcast.com for all of the details. The links will also be in the show notes. You can also leave any thoughts, feedbacks, or suggestions there. And yes, I will read it. Thank you for joining me today. I'm Jane Singer, and I will see you in our next episode of A Seat at the Table.